Hi, I'm Erica, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
I haven't been to a podium meeting in years. I have had the privilege of working with Elle as her sponsor for I don't even know how long at this point. It has been so amazing to come here tonight and to feel the love and the camaraderie and the support that she has, because I only get to see her in Hanford when she comes to our meetings. It's been an absolute joy to see her grow and to start turning into a young lady versus a little girl. So without further ado, this is Elle.
I'm Elle, I'm an alcoholic. I just want to tell you guys, I'm extremely nervous. I feel like a little kid trying to tell their parents how to do this thing. So, my experience, strength, and hope. My experience is that I grew up with an awesome dad who's actually in the crowd right there. And I'm really blessed. We were outside and like five people came up and was like, dude, I've heard such good things about you from Elle. And I was like, oh man, awesome, you guys, good job. And then I had a equally awesome mother, but my mom was a very sick woman. She was an alcoholic, like myself, like her dad, and so on and so forth in the family. And growing up, even though I had an awesome dad, and he was definitely there to support me through, pretty much he raised me as a single parent. So even though he was there for like school events and just all the deals, as a young lady, I wanted to be like my mom. So I want what she had, so I did what she did. And I realized that it was actually really simple to do what she does. I just drank and just whatever behaviors I saw her do, I mimicked. And I think when I was a teenager, I realized, because you can only blame being a kid and my life was so hard growing up and blah, blah, you can only do that so far. And then when you become a teenager, you have that sense that something can change, and I can change it. But instead, the Big Book says that defiance is the number one outstanding characteristic of an alcoholic. So I just made a conscious choice. I'm not quite sure why, but I just made a conscious choice that, one, the world owed me a living. Absolutely. Right, yeah. And that I was just going to, you know, as a teenager, and I am absolutely in charge, and I'm going to do what I want to do, and I know it's hurting me, and I know it's hurting everyone around me, but I'm still going to do it. So I started drinking and using at a young age, and you definitely can't say I can blame my mom, even though growing up I saw her get abused by her husband, and there's cops at the house, there's violence, there's all this stuff, and that definitely is a good indicator to stop. But I just didn't. I just absolutely didn't. I decided that I want to do what I want to do, and I want to have fun, and I want to have my instant gratification, and I want it now. So I started smoking weed, and that progressed to drinking, and that progressed towards everything else. So it was a trash can. And when I was about a sophomore, I got kicked out of school because I reaped what I sowed. And I stopped going to school, and I just made this my life. And I didn't care to have a degree. I didn't care. I just wanted to be known as the party girl. Like, I am so fun. Look at me, man. I have a friend, and she had a nickname, and my nickname was El Nino. And at the time, I thought, like, man, I'm so cool, dude. And that's just, and I guess for everyone, drinking and using is really fun in the beginning. That's why we do it. We didn't do it because it wasn't fun. But for me, when I was 17, my mom passed away. And that's when I got really hard into my addiction. I decided again, you know, the world owes me a living. So I started drinking and using daily, and I hung out with the seediest crowd. And since I wasn't going to school, I didn't really have an opportunity to make, like, nice, classy, high-class friends. So I just kind of hung out with, like, absolutely anyone who'd hang out with me. And that kind of stopped working. So what I did was I switched scotch to brandy. And instead of being a hardcore drug addict alcoholic, I was like, no, this, you know what? I'm going to become a Christian, okay? I'm now a Christian. My poor dad, who's in there, he's like, oh, man, these years. So I am... Because I'm an alcoholic, I do anything I do it, and I do it to the extreme. So I was going to Bible study, and I completely switched Scotch to brandy. I wasn't doing this for any great purpose, like I have a spiritual enlightening. I was just doing it because it filled me, and it made me feel good, and it made me feel powerful. So I was like witnessing to people, absolutely anyone who wanted to be around me. I was like, do you know Jesus? Jesus wants you as his friend. And I was like, I wouldn't just go to one Bible study because I'm a great alcoholic. I went to every Bible study in Orange County, okay? There's tons of churches. We have this thing called the... My dad's over there like, oh. I had, like, my whole bookshelf was now no longer fun. Like, fun books. It was now, like, this, like, it was like a concordance. It was Bibles. And I just did that. And just like in any disease, I became completely isolated. Nobody wanted to be around me. All my friends who I partied with, my friends... because the violence at my mom's house, because I wanted to stay with my mom, I went in the foster system, but I did make great friends. But when I was 18, you know, they stopped hanging out with me. They were like, you're too much. And that was the first taste I had of people starting to grow up and me just completely being absorbed in something. So I just became alone. Nobody wanted to be around me at all. I mean, I was a complete Jesus freak in the worst sense. And after I kind of snapped out of that, and I was like, oh no, like, what am I doing? Nobody wants to be around me. I decided to switch from scotch to brandy again, and being the alcoholic I am, I went completely the opposite direction. So it's a pendulum, and this is something I'm learning in my recovery, is that pendulum's always going to be swinging. I'm just learning how to kind of taper it down a little bit. So I went the opposite direction, and I saved up all my money, which wasn't much. The school gave me a bunch of money, so I saved up all their money that I had. And I bought myself a bunch of expensive gear, and I was so cool because I put people on pedestals, and I want to be like them. First it was my mom, then it was my cousins, and I want to be just like my cousin Juliana. And so they're so cool. They're like graduating college, they're like hiking and doing like all this cool stuff, right? So I was like, I'm gonna be just like them, right? So I take all my money and I buy expensive gear from REI, and I planned out a 2-year trip around the country. And it worked for a little bit. People were feeding my ego. They were telling me what a great idea this is, how adventurous I am. So I was really feeding off of it. So I got to do all these fun things. And in the beginning, just like my disease, it was fun in the beginning, you know. I got to hike the Grand Canyon. I got to do Mardi Gras in Louisiana. I got to go to the Elvis Museum. I got to do Elvis Week, actually. Spent a whole week celebrating Elvis. Long live the king. And just like all this cool stuff, and I met so many cool people. There's like a lot of people don't know, but there's like a traveling community. It's not the hobo community, it's a little different. It's a traveling community, and they just like college students who go around, they go hiking and they do all this stuff. So I really felt a part of for a while. And then even though I did all my geographics, no matter where I went, I could go to 15 different states, I'd go to 16 different states, I'd go to 50 states. It doesn't matter where I went, I brought myself with me. So I started burning bridges. And at first it was just minor stuff, like, oh, you know, like, you're not very cool. Like, well, I don't think you're cool either. Let's go our separate ways. To just being emotionally, I had no emotional sobriety. I had no sobriety period because I was drinking and using, and I had no emotional sobriety, and people caught on to that, and they didn't want anything to do with me. I was like a traveling train wreck all over the country. And that stopped working, and I ended up once again, for like the third time, I'm completely alone because nobody wants to be around me. My character defects are glaring, and nobody wants to be around me. My What I look like in addiction is this. Yeah, come here. I fucking hate you. Don't you come near me. Yeah, come on. It's safe. Don't come near me. Not emotionally sober, not emotional sobriety. So I was like a kid. I was like a kid running around the country, you know, and nobody wanted to play with me anymore. So I did the logical thing, and I just came back to L.A., but like an alcoholic. I have serious conformity issues. I don't like to conform, even if it's something really simple. Like, do your step and call me in 2 days. I'm calling in like 4 days. Like, hey, what's up? it's me. So I wanted to move home, but I can't. My ego is so big, I can't just say I'm going home. I have to be different. So I moved into a house. I moved into a hostel with 30 people. And we had a bunch of bunk beds, and it was downtown L.A., so I could get to the bars every night. It was just a really cool scene. So from the outside, I looked really awesome. I think, Victoria! She was like, no, you didn't. You really didn't. okay, so the truth is I probably didn't look that awesome. In my head, I did. This is my story, you guys. No, I'm just kidding. So, I love you, Victoria. So I moved in this house, and I was just a mess, you know, and living with so many people was such a great way for me to, because we're all young, and we have this really weird mix of, like, just absolutely, we have, like, college students, we have, like, these Russian guys live there, we have these Polish guys, we just have this really weird mix. We had, like, a couple, like, hobo guys come in and out, some young ones, and I just got to drink and use every day. I'd wake up, and the first thing I'd ask is, where's the party, and who's outside on the back porch, and who's sleeping in whose room, where are we? It was like living in the real world or something. Like, we were like, where are we? And that's when I just spiraled out of control. I really gave up. I had no design for living until I came to this program. This program taught me really how to live, what it means to be a productive member in society, how to give back to society. And when I don't know what to do, I can always call my sponsor and I can always reach out. And that's just, I didn't have that. And someone said to me, alcoholics, it's so easy to alienate an alcoholic. You can really say anything. And the messages I was getting from really loving people was, why don't you just do something different? Why don't you do something different? But what I was hearing was, look at Elle, you fucked up again. You really can't get this. And so we're going to call that a pity party. I had a pity party. I just went downhill. So I just kind of gave into my disease, and I went up to Humboldt. At that point, absolutely no one wanted me around. So it doesn't matter where I went. I could have gone to Arizona. I could have gone anywhere in the country, and people would have seen through my bullshit right away. I'm like an alcoholic. I'm a master bullshitter, so I can say what you want to hear, and I can say it when, and I can. If you say jump, I'll say how high. I'm also a people pleaser. They go hand in hand. So, and those worked for me for a long time. And my sponsor says that I'm going to keep doing what I'm going to do until it stops working. And when God stepped in, I wasn't grateful at the time, but I'm grateful now, because what I was doing had stopped working and I had absolutely no other plan. I did not know what to do. And this is like our least favorite thing, I think, in AA, but the cop saved me. Like, oh, yay. This is actually the climax of my story. The cop saved me. And that was, the cops kept arresting me in Humboldt because, for whatever reason, I don't know why, okay? I did nothing wrong, okay? They were, like, always there. let's see. Yeah, I was a mess. So I have a friend in program, and I've told my story a bunch of times, and I've shared, and you guys all know me. I know pretty much everyone in this room really well, and that's a blessing in the program, that I have community, and I'm so grateful to have you guys. I can look out and see so many faces right now, even my dad. Joseph, thanks, Dad. You're awesome. But So I tell my story, and there's this, finally somebody responded to this one part. When I was in Humboldt, it was really crazy. I had gone delusional on drugs, and I thought the Kardashians were after me. So finally I had somebody in program, my buddy, who was like, you know what they are? I was watching them, and they are really, they're pretty scary. yeah, I was completely delusional. Sorry, Dad. He's like, but I thought the Kardashians were after me. I thought the FBI was after me. I thought I was completely delusional. And so that's when God stepped in. And, you know, I was going to get locked up for 2 to 5 years. And they said, you can call somebody. If anybody will take you, you know, probably nobody will take you. We don't really want you in Humboldt, but probably nobody's going to take you. So I called up my dad, and my dad's an awesome, awesome, awesome dad. And he was like, yeah, you can live, you can come back and live home, but you've burned all your bridges. So I'm the only person you're really going to have here because nobody else wants you around. You burn them, and you burn them not just once, but multiple times. So, and that's why I'm so blessed, because even though I had my dad, right when I walked through the doors of AA, I had a fellowship, and finally people said, keep coming back. And finally you guys said, no matter how far down the scale you slid, you can still be part of our group. We'll still take you to meetings. And that's the big message that I'm supposed to, when people will share, I guess they're supposed to carry the message. Well, my message is that you never have to be alone again. Like right when I got here, I had my first two people were Mandy and Marla. So from day one, or day two, one day one I didn't socialize, day two I did. I exchanged numbers, and I, from that point on, called Mandy every single day, and she told me what to do, and I got to start working the steps. And even though I had absolutely no idea what I was doing, it still, I just knew, you know, something had changed. And even though I didn't understand what she was saying about find a higher power and try to have conscious contact with your higher power, she could have said, go out on all fours and bark like a dog, and I would have. I don't care what she said. She could have said, go to church, and I would have been like, sure, absolutely, where's my Bible? So I proceeded to do everything I was told, and because I did the footwork, I've been blessed so, so much. I can honestly say, maybe, I don't know, like 70% in this room I know on a personal basis, and I've hung out with you guys, and I've done things with you, and you guys have helped me, and I've called you. And that, to me, is amazing, because before I got here, I was slamming dope under bridges with hobos. So, you know, it's a big step up. And so my first year, I really want to say it was so exciting, and all this amazing stuff happened, and I just had so much growth, and, you know, I was running meetings and, like, all this stuff, and I really wasn't. I was on the phone talking to, like, I want to say, like, 15 different women. It was a cycle, and I would just call them all, and if one of them didn't answer, I would call the next one, and I would just do that over and over, and I would ask them really simple questions. Hey, my roommate asked to borrow my computer, and I just don't know how I feel about it. I don't really like him, but I want him to like me, so what do I do? And just like the most basic stuff, and they stepped in, and that I really believe is such a strong point of the fellowship, is that we pass the torch down, and we pass our knowledge down, and we just keep doing that, and we don't do it because my sponsors taught me so much about, it's not about me, it's not about my boyfriend, bless his heart. He likes to tell me, what is your motive here? Do you just want them to like you? Do you just want to be like the guru of AA? And I'm like, yes, I do. I'm unworthy. But I'm so grateful that I have people in my life who will do that, because on the streets, they would have co-signed anything for me. I could have said absolutely anything, and they would have co-signed it. And I've had fair weather friends also who I could have said anything, and they would have co-signed it. But in AA, I know that when you love somebody, you don't co-sign their shit. their stuff. And in the chapter to the employers, it says some of the best thing you can do sometimes for an alcoholic is just to fire them. If you're their employer and they're at work, sometimes the best thing you can do is just fire them, because that'll help them reach their bottom. And I know that people, if I start acting crazy, they're going to fire me in love here. They'll still love me, but they're not going to put up with my stuff. And I mean that in the best sense possible. I really wish I just had like this fountain of wisdom to give you guys. My fountain is running low right now. But I've been blessed. My friend, I called up Sammy Ramsey today because I know what to do in program. If I'm ever feeling a certain way that I can't define, get on the phone and call a woman. I've learned that the women will save your ass and the guys will pat your ass. So I know that. And I know that because when I first came in, I saw all the New Vision girls and I saw all the Pine guys. And I was like, oh, those New Vision girls are doing awesome, man. Those poor little puppies, I'm a lost puppy rescuer, okay? So I saw those Pine guys and I was like, they need my help. my dad's paying my rent, but these guys need my help. And at the end of the day, it's just an ego-feeding proposition for me and for them. And it's an exchange. I want them to feed my ego. And then I get to rescue somebody, and I get to feel better, and I get to seek lower companionship. And that's not the program's given me a design for living. That's not how I want to live anymore. I'd rather not do the easier, softer way. I'd rather just do whatever I have to do. And sometimes that's just, you know, being a good girl. Sometimes that's just being a good girl, okay? So Sammy, I called Sammy today, and I called Catherine, and they helped me so much before this because I was incredibly nervous, and I'm still incredibly nervous talking up to you guys because I know there's so much time in this room just between the front tables. There's so much time. But Catherine told me, or I'm sorry, an anonymous friend I called, somebody. There was somebody in program, and okay, just for that, I called Sammy and Catherine, so it could be anyone, okay? It could be absolutely anyone. But one of them said, I was like, I don't know what to say because I feel like since I've got sober, it's just, you know, I'm just doing these, I just go to work and then I go to meetings and then I'm in service and I'm a good girlfriend and I try to be kind, but that's all I do and I just do it over and over and over. So what am I going to get up at the meeting and say to people? And my friend said, you know, those things that you're talking about, those are just that's the icing on the cake. So the promises don't say you're going to get a job, you're going to get a house. The promises don't say that, but they do say spiritual things, like you're going to know how to handle situations that used to baffle you. You're intuitively going to have wisdom. You are going to have peace in every circumstance, and those are the blessings. And I can definitely come up here and tell you guys that I have experienced those things. And I do have icing on the cake, too. I do have a job. I'm so humble, you guys. I'm going to tell you. I'm so humble, I'm going to tell you guys. I got district employee of the month. I'm so recovered. I'm going to stand at the podium and tell you guys that. I'm so recovered I am. But those things are just icing on the cake, you know? I'm not homeless. I'm not under a bridge. I'm not with people I hate. I'm not worried that people are going to scam me and steal from me and then tell me to my face that I'm an amazing person. I'm not worried. I'm not worried about that stuff, you know? I've gotten so many blessings. I've gotten so many blessings. I when I see people now, they say the promises say you'll intuitively know how to handle situations that you staff less. When I get to see people I used with, even in Visalia, they'll come up to me and I had an experience with a guy. I was at a show and he came up and there's like four people I don't know. And he came up and he told these guys, he's like, you know what, she was a mess. That girl was a mess. She's a horrible person. Stay away from her. And so, of course, the first thing I did was call my sponsor and cry and have, you know, don't you know, like, this is so mean. How could you say that to a bunch of people I don't know? And then my sponsor, God works through my sponsor a lot of the time for me. So my sponsor, who's amazing, told me this is, well, first she said, you know, is what he's saying true? Are the things he's saying about you and your past true? Oh, no, of course not. So I was like, yeah, they are true. And she said, well, maybe you can use that as a chance to learn. And then maybe just treat him with compassion and kindness and then set up healthy boundaries with him. And for me, even... I'm so nervous. just something as simple as that. Those are things I didn't know, and thanks to my sponsor, I get to enact that, and my life is changing so radically. It used to be crazy, and now it's pretty smooth, and I'm so blessed, and that's just one of the problems. So when I have that situation happen again, I know how to intuitively handle it. I know what to do, and then if I don't know what to do in the next situation, I have the tools. I call my sponsor, I open the big book, and if all else fails, I just reach out to a newcomer. And God, I have so much time. That was like my whole story. you guys like jokes? Who likes jokes? But I guess one of my friends told me today it's the triangle of programs. It's the fellowship, it's service, and it's recovery. And I'm so blessed that I get to be a part of that, and I get to give that to somebody else. So far, I haven't had any successful sponsees that have called me, and I'm not going to call them my sponsee if they haven't done their little footwork of calling me every day for 14 days. But just the fact that I'm able to do that, just the fact that I can be there, that gives me, that it's selfish, but I get so much out of it. I get to know that at the end of the day, I'm an accountable person, I'm a trustworthy person, and I'm a solid person today. And that's from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. excuse me. sponsorship. I can't say higher things about sponsorship. For alcoholics, I know it's really hard, like I said, to conform and take direction from other people. But if you're in program and you don't have a sponsor, I definitely recommend getting one. They're the person who's standing on top of the stadium, looking down into the maze, saying, go left, go right, go left, go right. I've been there. They're also the ones who give you the ingredients to bake the cake. All you have to do is do this, do a little bit of that, do this, and boom, you have it. And I am so blessed to say I have an amazing sponsor, Erica. I'm going to turn this on her now. I'm turning the whole meeting on her now. I am so blessed. And that, again, is God doing for me what I can't do for myself. And during my journey, when I came in, like I said, I was a hardcore Christian. I was fanatical. I was a fundamentalist. And I really thought I was better than everyone else because I was saved and I was going to heaven. And in program, I've learned that it's so important to find a higher power. It doesn't matter what it is. And the big book says at first that can be your entrance to a higher power. At first that can be the fellowship. If that's what you want it to be, that's absolutely fine. The book says that is totally okay. And as you grow, you'll change. So for me, I've learned that if my higher power isn't working for me, it is absolutely okay to change it around in an instant. There is no problem with that. So I've tried yoga. Everyone who knows me, which is most everyone in this room, knows I have a gigantic Hindu goddess tattoo on my arm. And I also have a Bible that I read, and that is absolutely okay. It's a God of our understanding. And it, when something doesn't work, I just change it and I don't think about it. Finding a higher power is amazing. You guys, I'm not going to lie, I'm running out of things to say. I'm so grateful for this program. Bill says, I can take questions. I'm not sure if anyone's done that, and we're just doing this because I'm running out of shit to say. But,
do
you guys do that? Okay. All right, we're going to take questions now. Mandy. I absolutely do sponsor. I am a huge, huge fan of sponsorship. I have no problem sponsoring anybody. I only sponsor women. That's what I've been taught, and that's what works for me, just because it comes to healthy boundaries. But as far as sponsorship goes, I've been taught a really awesome way, and that's to have someone call me for 14 days. So if you can do that, I can sponsor you. If you can't do that, I can't sponsor you. So, bye. Should I just keep going?
Do you have any particular experiences
with stuff? Oh, yeah. Okay. So I didn't write down stuff because I was afraid that I would start, I have all my jokes set out. I'd have all my sad parts, and you guys would cry with me on my sad parts and laugh with me on my happy parts. So I didn't want to do that. But I think that for me, working the steps, because this is about the steps, right? This whole program is built around the steps. So I told you guys about 1 through 4. The most critical step for me was step 5, because I, growing up, I thought I was the black sheep. And I didn't think I was the black sheep of my house. I thought I was the black sheep of the universe. So when I got to do step 5, I got to realize that, just like I was saying about community, it doesn't matter how far down the scale you've slid, there's always going to be people who are there for you and who have also had your experiences. So when I got to do my 5th step, it was amazing. It was like a four-hour 5th step. And I want to say the whole time it was just back to back, like, oh man, I was so ashamed of this I did. She's like, please. I got like way more experience on this than you, and blah blah blah. And it was just like the most gratifying experience for me. I got to learn so much from it. So I definitely recommend doing a thorough 5th step. It's not as scary as people think it is. And the amends for me was a little bit difficult. So now that I'm reworking my steps, I've already worked them, and now I'm going to rework them again. And this time I'm going to try to be a little more thorough. But when I did it the first time, I jumped in, and I was kind of just all over the place, but it worked. I mean, as long as you suit up and show up, you're going to get results. So I was, a lot of the people definitely forgave me. Some of them wanted me back in their life, even though it was unhealthy, so I definitely had to cut them out. But and then some people just absolutely told me they wanted nothing to do with me, and oh yeah, you are a bitch, and oh yeah, that was the most fucked up thing that's ever happened to me. And I was like, oh. Well, you know what? There's two sides to every story, okay? So, and I didn't say that, and that's when I picked up my phone and called my sponsor and said, I am not ready for this. So, I definitely recommend it. And do we have time for one more question? I feel so weird doing questions, you guys, but it's... Domingo. That's an awesome question. I think I would hit more women's meetings, just because the women's meetings, they're awesome. The reason I don't hit them as much as I should is just because sometimes I'm in them and I'm not, I feel like I might be looking for the differences and not the similarities. which is easy to do in any meeting, but I definitely want to make that part of my program. And I don't know, maybe just be a little bit less about L this year and be more about anybody but L this year. That might be a good start too. And that's it. And I'm done. Thank you so much.